Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00069. Recorded on February 21, 2024. Production location, Post-Harlan, Texas. Mega Texa Grande, Part 2, Chapter 69. Note,
the opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88. This monologue is continued from the previous episode, Chapter 00068, Mega Texa Grande, Part 1.
It's opulent. It's disturbingly opulent, right? I'm just not that kind of guy. I mean, I know, like, being in being a Christian here in this area in Texas. Now, I'm poor, right? I would probably call myself somewhere in lines of middle to upper lower class, right? Not lower middle class, mid to upper lower class. That's how my wife and I are living, right? And we're good. We're fine. We're fine with that. Our life is not about money. It's not about the brass ring. It's about the faith and the love And the spiritual purpose of it all, right? And I mean that sincerely, absolutely. All the wealth, all the provision, it all seems to just take care of itself, right? Every time I look at my bank account, which is every couple of months or so, I've always got like $4,000 or $5,000 in there more than I thought I had, and I have no idea where the hell it came from. It's just always that way. I don't sit there tediously over my budget month to month, counting every nickel. I just let it take care of itself, and it's always burgeoning. Okay, all right. Let it be so. We're poor, but we don't want for nothing. That's why I'd say we're probably like upper lower class. We have a savings. We're working, both of us, you know. House is paid for. That's a big part of it too, but I'm still paying for this truck, the F-150 mobile studio, right? $600 a month I shell out for this, and another $200 something for the Harley. You know, I'm still paying, and yet somehow I just have more and more money. And I just spend freely. It reminds me of my bachelor days when I had a stupid big house of my own in Georgia. It was only 2,100 square feet, but it was just me living in it. It was ridiculous anyway. And it was not opulent like a 4 or 5 star hotel like these people live in. Look, and I say all that to say is I've been in these houses, right? As a Christian in this area involved, especially as a Protestant, you do these small groups, and they're usually done at houses, right? They're Bible studies, small groups held in people's residences. And I would end up, grouped into somebody's house that's one of these McMansions. And I never liked going to these. I never felt comfortable in those houses. It's not me. It's not who I am. I may even get into this later, but I don't even think it's what Christianity is. There's just something wrong. That crossroads between opulence, prosperity, and Christianity is off kilter to my heart, my soul, my mind, and my strength. But that's the way it is around here, right? It's really a Protestant thing. It's mega everything. You got these mega homes that are basically hotels for a small family. It's stupid. It's stupid big, right? And, you know, and they go to the mega, you know, speaking of the churches and the Protestantism and generally the Baptists, but all of them, you know, the prosperity, I mentioned Prosper Texas, the Prosperity Gospel, those are mega churches. And that's what I'm going to say. You got mega houses, mega churches, right? Mega churches. I brought up that word Prestonwood, right? Well, I brought Preston, but there's a church up there off of Preston in, what the hell is it called over there? Oh, I forget the name of the town now. It was very near to where I lived in Far North Dallas, but it's in Collin County over there. Hebron, a Bible word, right? Hebron, H-E-B-R-O-N, Hebron. A town there, it's on the edge of Collin County and Dallas County and Denton County by Carrollton, maybe even part of Carrollton. I don't know what it's called. Hebron, and they got this big Baptist church there called Prestonwood, right? How big? The acreage was somewhere in the area 150 acres for the facilities, right? Weekly attendance is 17,000 people. Membership is 45,000 people. And their worship area, their praise and worship area, 7,000 seats. But it's basically an arena. And they actually expanded in 2006. I was not familiar with that until now. Up to this place called Prosper, right? Prosper, Texas. Long before they started development up there, they slapped a church mission up that way. And I don't know what the statistics are with that. But this Prestonwood Baptist Church, and I don't know the truth of it all, but it's kind of locally famous or rumored to contain a McDonald's and a Starbucks on the inside, right? Like you go to the church and you enter into the lobby and you got a McDonald's and all this stuff. I was looking at their website or something online about it, and it just said they got a cafe. But what the cafe is like a food court, like you have in a mall, from what I heard. I don't know. I've never been there, and I won't be there. Definitely not my kind of place on all kinds of levels. But it's an example of a mega church, which Texas has a bunch. Not every church is mega. Most of the churches you see around, when you look around, are actually very small. They're in strip malls, right? That's your typical church. It's small fellowships. Where the Protestants are concerned, you know, it's a cult of personality, usually. One guy with a Bible, interpreting it his own way, and has just some kind of personal magnetism, is able to sway small groups of people into throwing money at him, you know. That's more often the case, but when it ain't, these churches get really big, right? The mega church, right? So you got the mega houses, the mega churches, and now they got the mega stores, right? You know, 15 years ago, you had like the Bass Pro and the Cabela's, the big hunting stores. And of course, you had the box stores like Home Depot. And you had the Walmart Supercenters and things like that. But now it's just like everything is looking at those examples of big production stores and pumping it full of steroids, right? You go up into the heart of that area I was talking about, that post Arlen McMansion country, and you've got like this section of you got like the Frisco into the next town over up there, name escapes me, it's an unusual name for a town, but you got like the Nebraska Furniture Mart. This is a furniture store. You have to take 3 days off from work and get a motel room to go and see that place. It's huge. It's enormous. And again, they got like cafes inside it. It's a place you go. You take the family and you spend a day looking at furniture, eating, having coffee. And then if you buy something, they got a separate building that is bigger than my entire neighborhood just to load it into your car. You got to like take a ticket. You got to drive like half a mile down the road. But it's still all attached. It's all part of the same complex. It's ginormous. And I talked about Shields before. S-C-H-E-E-L-S. It's some company, I think, out of Wisconsin, somewhere, Minnesota, way up north up there, right? It's a sporting goods store. Similar to your Academy Sports, your Dick's Sporting Goods. This thing is like two towns big. It's like three city blocks. It's got a Ferris wheel in the middle of it. It's another place like that. It's just this mega store. It's got everything. And it's great. Both of these places, they got all kinds of stuff. And the prices are good. But it's so Texas, like you would imagine Texas to be. When you talk about in Texas, everything is big. Everything's big in Texas. This is bigness, right? You get these mega houses, and you got the mega churches, and you got the mega stores, right? Mega, mega, mega. Mega is it Greek or Latin? Some kind of prefix for the number million, right? It denotes a million, but it's used in our common contemporary lexicon to suggest something that is extraordinarily large, right? Extraordinarily large. Now, I was talking about that Prestonwood Baptist, right? Those numbers, 45,000 members, right? 45,000 members. And I think, I look at that number, and I know what a Texas Southern Baptist is, right? And out of 45,000, I'm going to say 44,900 of them probably have no idea what Holy Orthodoxy is, right? The actual apostolic faith, the apostles that they read, they have no idea. No idea. And I would venture to say probably the same 44,900 people are probably all Christian Zionists too, like I was bemoaning about politics earlier, right? And that is kind of like, this is what our McMansion country consists of. This is it. These are the people. And it's a different sector of life in DFW, in Texas as a whole, right? Now, every city, Austin's got this situation. Houston's got this situation. San Antonio, probably not so much. And the other larger cities around, like El Paso, Lubbock, not so much, right? It's really a Dallas, Austin, Houston thing, what they call the triangle in Texas, right? These cities have these suburbs, and these suburbs have these McMansion areas to them. I don't know if one can be bigger than what I'm describing in that, like, western half of Collin County. But there's a culture of conservative Christian Zionists, military industrial complex, bent over for Israel minded people. And this is very much different than me, right? My Christian faith doesn't go that way. And a lot of the ministry work I was doing here in Texas as a Protestant is tied in to that kind of mentality. And it was always at friction. We were always at odds. I was always the odd duck. I never fit in. And thank God that while I was contemplating Orthodoxy and trying to find out where to go and pursue it, a biker who was Orthodox was delivered right into my face and pointed the way, right? And it's a life-changing moment, really. A good thing. And I say all this stuff about Orthodoxy and all these Christian Zionists, Baptists, Protestants having no idea. But in McKinney, Texas, plunked down in the middle of downtown, unassumedly, is this little itty-bitty Russian Orthodox church called St. Nicholas, right? So even McKinney had it there the whole time. I wasn't even aware of it, right? I wasn't aware of it. I was church shopping when I showed up in McKinney, Texas. I was looking for a place to start my faith, to get actually baptized, and a place that I could have easily ended up in. As time has proven out, I had no idea about. I had no idea about it. So here in Texas, we've got the modern shopping enormity in abundance. All varieties of establishments that are just strictly double steroid oversized. And I can't say it's a bad thing. And I don't mean to. I don't mean to. It's a Texas thing. Texas does it big, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Hell, we're even known for our mega filling stations, right? By now, you may have heard of Buc-ee's, 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 Buc-ee the Beaver, right? I've only been to a couple of them, inside maybe twice, filling up outside once. People are huge fans of them. You ride around DFW, you see little round yellow Buc-ee the Beaver stickers in the windows and on the bumpers of all these SUVs driving around. I don't even understand it. Do you get like a discount for having the sticker, or you're just such a fan of the place? See, I tend to think people are just such a fan of the place. It's a gas station. It's a big gas station, but it's a gas station. Now, it has a mart, and the mart is huge also. When I say big gas station, I mean to say it's got like, what, 40 lanes or more? God knows, a few hundred pumps, and it services diesel as well. So it's big like that. And when I say 40 lanes, it might be even more than that. There's a lot of lanes, and it's always full up too. I don't know if the gas is any cheaper. I don't really know what the story is. It's like everybody in Texas stopped at a Buc-ee's somewhere in their lives, and they got slipped like a Mickey, you know, a Buc-ee but a Mickey, or Mickey but a Buc-ee Mickey, right? Where they're like drugged up or hypnotized. I don't know. I don't get it. It's a gas station and a mart. You can't call it a mini mart because it's a maxi mart, you know. Huge. It's a big store, all kinds of souvenirs, the kind of stuff that you would find at a gas station / truck stop. It's large. It has food that's cooked on the premises. The food is good. That's a big reason people really like it. It's good, but you pay for it. It's expensive. And I don't know. If I was on a road trip and there was nowhere else to go. See, I prefer a regular old truck stop. I don't know why. Just the little dirtiness. It's not filthy or anything like that, but the seediness of it. Truck drivers, their lives. I used to drive a truck, and that's probably part of it right there. There's a certain nostalgic feel for me. And again, I don't mean to bag on Buc-ee's. It's just another Texas fact of life. Texas, where everything is done so big, right? Mega houses and mega churches and mega stores. There's the mega filling stations, and there's even mega supermarkets. I think, all right? I have to qualify it. Now, most people by now in this country should be familiar with Walmart to one degree or another, right? Now, Walmart has supercenter stores, which are larger size Walmarts. They're pretty big, and it's a department store, low-end Chinese import department store that also has a grocery section, right? Maybe a fifth of the store is groceries, and then the rest of it's all kinds of other stuff, clothing and toys and electronics and the Hallmark cards, and they got lawn care. Right? A good friend of mine works the lawn care in a Walmart in Plano. My wife and I, while we were on our way back from the McKinney Third Monday Trade Days flea market, heading home, just kind of gallivanting around, decided that we were going to pop off. We heard that there's a particular chain of supermarkets that here to now has been oriented more towards Central and South Texas, but is now starting to grow up into the DFW area, right? It's called H-E-B, right? H-E-B. H-E-B, and that's kind of weird. It's a weird name for a supermarket, right? But it is a bona fide, legitimate, from the beginning to the end, so far, nothing but a Texas chain of supermarkets that goes back almost 120 years, right? Now, as the story goes, now, just to complete what I was saying, we stopped in McKinney, farthest western reaches of McKinney, plunked down in the middle of this post-Arlen McMansion country that I described earlier, and one of the four area HEBs that have been put up in the past year or two is located right here. It's McKinney, but it's like literally right across the street from the city of Frisco. So McKinney's got that one. Frisco's got its own. Allen's got its own, and Plano has its own. West Plano, right? So these HEB has decided to open up four markets in the northern part of DFW, in the very heart of this Collin County suburban wasteland. Wasteland is not the right word for it. This McMansion suburbia that just goes on and on and on, right? So HEB intends to make some profits off of this upper middle class, upper echelon suburban world, right? As we have it here. Now, I've been to HEBs before, right? I spoke about the red flag laden relationship that drew me blind dated into McKinney, Texas. Well, that woman had kinfolk down in San Antonio. We used to go a few times a year down to San Antonio. And between here and there, you know, once you get outside of DFW, you start seeing HEBs. When you're in San Antonio, see, San Antonio is kind of ground zero for HEB. That's where their headquarters is. So that is a very dominant supermarket down there. And if you've been down there to visit and not staying in a hotel or anything, chances are you're going to wander into an HEB. Anywhere else, really, south of I-20, any town you go through, there's a good chance that you're going to go see an HEB. And if you need to run to a market for something, that's where you run. Just like any other supermarket chain, some of them are small, some of them are big. These ones, apparently, that they decided that they were going to put up in the heart, you know, ground zero of McMansion suburbia in Collin County, they're ginormous. I brought up Walmart Supercenters, and I mean to make a direct comparison. Now, I'll explain what this is. The Walmart is a department store, and they have a section off to one side that is groceries, right? Now, the HEB that we went to was at least as big as a Walmart Supercenter, but it was entirely groceries the whole way through, right? Big, long aisles, and many of them, and ginormous produce section. Had their own barbecue joint in there. We didn't check that out. I should have. Honestly, and here's what the one disappointing thing about it, right? I was going in there to get their, you know, like deli fried chicken. Every supermarket does that, right? Nah, either I couldn't find it or they don't do it. And that was disappointing. I was going to fried chicken myself to death on, this was Saturday afternoon. Nope, never happened. And I didn't check out the barbecue. We had gone past that already by the time I figured out. So it was a big store. There was a lot of people there. But it, like, strangely, it didn't feel crowded. Like, you could move around. I wasn't pestered like I normally get in crowded places. It wasn't very fancy or anything like that. It was almost like a warehouse atmosphere. You know, it wouldn't, like, upscale, hootie-tootie, out of my league. It was not a shopping experience like that at all. It's just down-to-earth store, just ginormous. And now the good things I could say otherwise, parking was easy enough to do. There was no problem there, getting around in the parking lot, right? All that kind of mundane stuff. The lines were not long. They had plenty of them. They had cashiers working. They had automated lines, you know, whichever you wanted to do. Everything we went in there looking for, looking at, seemed to be a little bit cheaper than where we would get it elsewhere. It just seemed to be that way, you know. Coffee is so expensive, for example, right now. We drink almost exclusively decaf. I will throw in a pinch of regular 2-3 days a week, maybe, while I'm at work, if the need is there. The decaf usually costs a little bit more than the regular. I guess the extra processing involved with it, you know, marks up the price some. It usually tastes like crap anyway, but coffee is coffee. You know, some of it's better than others. We, because of the expense of it all, have been buying store brand decaf, right? Because we go through it very quickly. So it's a lot cheaper to get the store brands. It sucks. It's horrible. It's weak. I don't even know, you know, if blow by blow, is it really worth the bother? Because, you know, you make half a pot of coffee. Normally you'd use 2 scoops. This, you make a half a pot of coffee, you need 4 scoops. So you go through it quicker. So I don't know. In the end, I don't know. I do a lot of mixing and matching coffee. I don't want to go off on this coffee tangent. That's not the point. The point is price comparisons. Now, we get store brand from some of the other chains around here. They're decaf, the store brand. And HEB has its own store brand. The size of it is like 33% larger. And the price of it was like $1.50 less. That's an example, right? The store brand stuff, you get like a huge bang for the buck in comparison to other places. Another thing, I my wife did some dog food comparisons and found that favorable too. Dog food can get expensive, right? At one point, she wanted to go just browsing spices to get ideas in her head. We have a bunch of spices in the house. She wanted to get more. She wasn't sure what she wanted. She just starts looking at that, and I figure, well, she doesn't know what she's looking for. I can't help her. I walk down to the end of the aisle and see what I can get into. And right at the end of the aisle there, across the way, was the smoked meats, right? And they had the meat section over there. So I walked over, seeing what kind of smoked sausages that they have. And we have a particular favorite brand. It's not really widely distributed. We don't really see it anywhere. You have to go down. It's a Czechoslovakian company in a Czechoslovakian town called West Texas. I brought it up before in one of those previous episodes where I was dropping F-bombs. This is not one of those, right? No F-bomb version. And like Buc-ee's, they got a huge gas station, right? It's not Buc-ee's huge, but it's way bigger than anything else that you ever saw otherwise, right? It's called Slovacek's, and it's the one and the only, right? Slovacek's. It's right on I-35 heading south, shortly before Waco, heading south towards Austin and San Antonio, right, from Dallas. And Slovacek's has a smoked sausage that they sell, and they got refrigerators full of them. We bought like 30 or something pounds of it one time, maybe the last time we were down there, because that's our favorite. And they got all these different varieties and everything. And we just love it. Even the summer sausage, whatever. We just buy it up, right? And we will make special trips. We will drive out. It's like an hour and a half maybe to get there and back. Just to get that, right? And we haven't in a while. We ran into one store somewhere along the way in the fall, I think, where somebody had it on the shelf. So we bought some. And lo and behold, I'm looking for all the good Texas brands that I know of. And I did a whole episode on it. It was called Bag of Dicks. Go look it up, right? Right? Funny, right? It was kind of funny, actually. There will be F-bombs in that one, though, I promise. They had Slovacek's on there. They had like 3 or 4 different varieties of it. They had different size packs. We got the large, big pack and 2 other ones. That's what we'd like. They had it. HEB had it. They had it there, right? So the selection was good, better. The departments were bigger. You know, I mean, you got these long aisles, this big store. There's more room for more stuff. And because of the amount of people going in there and buying, it's very popular, you know. they're moving that stuff, and they're able to bring distributors in of all kinds. It's impressive to me, you know. And I could just say hats off. There's a Texas store, right? There's a Texas store, a Texas supermarket, a mega supermarket, I would have to say, right? And HEB, like, it's a chain, right? It's a chain. It's got a history to it. I'll get a little bit into that as we go here. But there's a Mexican variation of it. When I say Mexican, I mean it's like in Mexico, right? They got HEB in Mexico, but it's got like a Mexican name to it. They may have some of them on this side of the Rio Grande also, in very Mexican, you know, Spanish-speaking communities. Not sure about that. I think that's the case. Also, this is something I didn't know, and there may be a lot of people around here that don't know it. We have a chain in this area. It's kind of a foofy chain. It competes with Whole Foods. It's that kind of store. It's called Central Market, right? You see a lot of them the closer you get to Dallas. Like I said, it's foofy stuff. It's a lot of that downtown, you know, that highfalutin, the organic and all that kind of stuff, right? The people that go in for all that, piss their money away for no gain, because it isn't. It doesn't make a difference. If you ever worked in the field, you understand that organic as a word, according to the USDA, doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean shit. It's a designation. You pay for it. Honestly, it's bullshit. But hey, makes people feel good, so they'll spend an extra $5 on it, right? Central Market, anyway. So we got these Central Market, and I've seen them. I've been in one of them, I think, in Plano, right? Plano. Was it on Coit? Getting up by close to the Medical City Plano, the hospital, I think somewhere in there. But yeah, that's a HEB store. That's part of the chain. It's a branch of the chain, branch of the tree. HEB, like I said before, it's almost 120 years old in its existence. It wasn't originally called that. It was called something else. It was a store, just a shop opened up in the city of Kerrville, Texas, K-E-R-R-ville, Texas, which is to the west of Austin, kind of way out there a little bit, and out in hill country, supposedly, because I've never been there. A gorgeous place, right? Gorgeous place. Kerrville, Texas is where the first HEB was opened by a woman called Florence. And I shit you not, but B-U-T-T, Florence, but. And it was her son, Howard, her youngest son, Howard, who took the business by the horns and began to establish its presence as a chain. That actually began with him purchasing places down in the Rio Grande Valley, right? I think first in Del Rio and then other places. You've heard of Del Rio, right? I'll talk about Del Rio maybe a little bit. But yeah, so the origins of HEB, it starts out of Kerrville, but really the chain version of it begins in the Rio Grande Valley, right? And that's why you have, it's kind of the central location for the establishment of the chain. It crosses the river into Mexico. It stays on the Texas side, and it grows out both ways from there, right? So the Rio Grande is really the geographical heart of their entire corporate operation, while at the same time, San Antonio is where they maintain their headquarters, right? So it all kind of grows out from there, and you're only going to find HEB supermarkets or its variants in Texas or Mexico. Okay? So far. But this is a business model that'll probably catch on in the same manner that Buc-ee's did. Buc-ee's once upon a time was only a Texas thing. Now it's all the way across the South. You can go see it just about anywhere, right? In only a couple of years' time, it went from like one or two locations to, I don't know, 20, 30. I don't know how many of them there are now. They're all over up here. You used to have to drive a few hours to go visit one. Now every other town seems it's got one on the highway. Not quite that dramatic, but it is that way relative to what it used to be. Anyway, just saying, HEB as a business model is finding success, and it probably will start to go beyond Texas and get aimed towards national. I don't know if that's the goal. It may not be. Texas, you know, Texans like Texans, and in a lot of cases can give a shit about everything and everybody else. So We don't know. We'll see what they do. H-E-B, though, that weird name. It was this son, right? It was the son of Florence Butt, named Howard E. Butt. There's your H-E-B, the guy's initials, right? He took whatever the original name of the store was and just changed it into his initials and called it a store or market, you know, H-E-B market. That's really unique and original, right? Say you're driving around Texas and you see a H-E-B, that's what it means. Who knew? I didn't know that. I didn't know, right? So I mentioned the Rio Grande, right? The Grand River. Rio means river in Spanish, right? And Grande means grand. So it's really just the Grand River, right? The Grand River that, for the most part, forms the border between the country of Mexico and the Republic of Texas, right? Stretching from El Paso down to the Brownsville / Matamoros region and into the Gulf of Mexico, it runs just about 1,900 miles. Now, not out of El Paso, but in its total length, right? The headwaters are up in the Colorado Rockies. It runs southward, like a due south direction, all the way across Mexico from its northern border with Colorado to its southern border with Texas and Mexico in El Paso, right? So it covers all New Mexico, runs right through like Albuquerque, for example, probably off of Santa Fe, along I think it's 25, which I've never been on, been across up in Colorado, but never been on. I want to go out there to New Mexico, White Sands, all that stuff. I want to, but that's beside the point and on the bucket list for the future. And possibly some episodes if we get around to that, right? Anyway, so the entire length of the river is just shy of 1,900 miles, running from Colorado down to the Gulf of Mexico. And like I said, forming that border between Texas and Mexico from El Paso to Brownsville. That, a drive, right? If you were to drive from El Paso to Brownsville, this is all Texas, mind you, okay? That's a 900-mile drive. If you were to kayak the river, it would be a few hundred miles even longer than that still, right? That's the length of the border is going to be in excess of 1,000 miles on the Rio Grande, right? The Grand River. At 1,900 miles in total length, that's the fourth longest river in the entire country, right? Who thought? Who would have thunk it? You don't think about that. Most people don't really think about the Rio Grande being apart from Texas, you know, up in New Mexico, up in Colorado. But yeah, it truly is. It truly is. It's a very, very long border that's formed on the river. And yeah, the thing about it is, this shit's been in the news, right? The whole Texas border, a U.S. border situation, all these illegal immigrants looking for amnesty, who have been just piling up at the border. This crazy thing that's happened since the Biden administration took over, right? They've opened up the borders intentionally to let people in. Gee, I wonder what that's all about, right? A bunch of assholes. Just a bunch of assholes. I'm befuddled by just the obvious intent. All of it bad, you know? All of it bad. I guess maybe I'll get into that a little tiny bit before I got a roll here. But there's, you know, for as long as this border is on the river, on the Rio Grande, Rio Grande, right? Say it like you mean it, right? Say it like you mean it. Rio Grande. My inner Mexican wanting to bust out of me, you know? Like Meatloaf. The song's just bust out of him. What if Meatloaf was Mexican? I often wonder. Anyway, for as long as this river border is, there's only very few crossing points to get you out of Mexico into Texas. Like, you don't see anybody fleeing Texas to go to Mexico. That's not a problem, right? You could jump in a little, like a kayak or a raft. You could swim across, and that's it. Anywhere that's not like a customs checkpoint, right? You walk right in. Problem is, and almost all of the land on both sides, Mexico and Texas, around the Rio Grande at the border area there, is desert, southwest, wilderness. And maybe worse, a lot of that property on the Texas side is actually private property. So when you go swim in the river and walking through the desert, hoping to survive a several hundred mile walk to the first sign of any kind of life, well, the first life you may encounter may be a private property owner with a shotgun who has every right to just blow your head off. So it's frowned upon, right? To even try to take that route. You know, most people couldn't do it if they were permitted to do it. And being not permitted to do it is very risky to your life. At no real expense to a private property owner on the way. So you have these crossing points where there's bridges that go between Mexico and the United States, right? And there's customs checkpoints along the way. And at these places, the federales of the United States of America, managed out of Washington, D.C., have been just allowing these people to stream in to the United States over the Texas border. For 3 years, this shit's been going on, and nobody's done shit about it. Yes, our governor, Greg Abbott, who is the quote-unquote Bush Republican, right? He's one of them. I know it. I'm glad he stands up for my gun rights. I'm glad he's a pro-lifer. Yeah, what Greg Abbott did for 3 years was take these illegal aliens at the Texas border, put them on buses, put them on planes, and send them into blue states with sanctuary cities, right? So they don't end up in Texas. But the problem is they end up in the United States anyway. And now, after 3 years of this shit, finally the governor makes a stand and uses the National Guard to go down to the borders and put an end to this shit, right? And everybody's like, yeah, Texas versus D.C., right? The states versus the feds. Let's do this. I even felt that kind of patriotism well up in me, right? But then I sat back a second and I said, wait a minute. What about this 3 years, all this shit? All these people that have come into this country through Texas and Arizona and California, that's how they're doing it, right? All these people are coming in, and just because you want to get them out of your state doesn't mean they're out of the nation. You could send them up to New York. Guess what New York can do? Send them right to Dallas. You wouldn't even know. So what is the point of it all? It's bullshit. It's theatrics. It is posturing, right? It's a governor posturing against the D.C. feds. But the damage is done. Whatever the powers that be, the D.C. elite who answer to the London elite, right? They do. That's how it rolls. That's how messed up our nation has become in the past 10, 20 years, right? The whole flip-flop from our mortal enemy to our Lord. That has us bent over, right? And they never won a war. They just did it through the Federal Reserve System. Oh, I'm back to that again, right? Oh, this whole border thing was bullshit. It should have been stopped in the beginning. Armed forces should have been down there. Of course, the Democrats, for whatever it's worth, they want it to happen because they don't have a 50% slam dunk voting base anymore. Everything is starting to move conservative. I promise you. They cheated 2020. They cheated 2020 big. Donald Trump had a legitimate 72 million votes, which was like the most ever in history, only except for what? Joe Biden's 81 million? You think 81 million people went out and voted for Joe Biden? Kiss my ass. No chance. The likelihood was that it was probably more in the lines of like 48 million. It was that dramatic for real. That many cheater votes had to have been processed in the 2020 elections, right? It's a massive cheat. The reason that these people are being brought in, allowed to stream in, is because they're trying to balance the books. There is a massive cultural shift going towards conservatism happening in this country. But we're being deceived to think otherwise. Mark my word. Mark my word. That's really what's been happening. And should Donald Trump resume presidency in 2025, it won't be long before you see that reality come into fruition.
So, let's wrap this shit up. Finally, put a bow on it. This entire two-part episode, Mega Texagrande, that's a word. That's a Maverick 88 in the dictionary word. Mega Texagrande. It all began with the wonderful and colorful imagery of blooming daffodils, but then began to wander off into the gray misery of this unlikely subservience that our nation, United States of America, has succumbed to, falling into the hungry jowls of Great Britain in conjunction with its globalist cabal overlords. It all began with the Woodrow Wilson follies, right? A president who, for President's Day, is due no veneration whatsoever. A sellout, right? He was a sellout. Blackmailed sellout. His vanity, his name, protecting his image of himself and his public persona was more important than the country who actually elected him into office, right? Nice. Very nice. And he is one of thousands who have done that. And this is the problem at hand now. It's a great country, United States of America. The concept, the history has been a bumpy ride. There's been a lot of stupidity. There's been a lot of inherent, pardon me, inherent character flaws that were thrust upon us through our original manger of Britain. Britain was and is a monarchy practicing colonization all over the world at the time. That's who they were. That's who they are. They were in the practice of reaching out. When I use that word colonization, this is not just, oh, you know, guys going out on big old sailboats across the ocean with the funny looking muskets and setting villages all around the unexplored world. No. No, the colonization was a bunch of pirates going out to steal treasure that didn't belong to them from wherever they could find in the world. Wherever they can get to, whoever they had to trample, they were going to mine gold and other precious items. That's what colonization was about and remains about. It's always been about that. So Britain was always this monarchy, and they were always practicing this colonization, and they were took over by a globalist cabal interested in global domination. Do you know the story of that? Do you know how the worth, the value of Great Britain was took over by banking elite? Look that up. Look that up. Two times they supported this banking elite, this globalist elite, supported the crown of Great Britain in trying to regain possession of their colonized territories in the Americas. And two times with the help of who? Orthodox Christian Russia were swatted back, were humiliated in defeat. And they came to a point where they decided, hey, all we want out of this situation overseas in the West is the loot. We're pirates. We just want the booty. We don't want to have to manage all that shit over there. So how about we just snake our way into their financial structures and transfer the wealth overseas back to Britain and into Europe and all the banks that were set up around Europe and France and Germany and Italy, of course, London, and there was one more, and I'm not exactly sure where that was. Vienna, probably, but I'm not positive. Look it up. Look it up. So, the war between the States and Great Britain became a financial war. And the problem with this country is, from the start, you had people who were pursuing the idea of central banks. And central banks is the idea of, it's the weakness. It's the weak link in our hopes. Because through those central banks, so much of what makes us great, collectively, is stolen. Through the 19th century, there was fighting over this situation with the quote-unquote central banks. In that century, what we know as the Federal Reserve today was known as the central banks back then. From the inception, there was arguments, Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson, about the idea of a central bank. John Quincy Adams stood by it. Andrew Jackson did not. Abraham Lincoln did not. He was assassinated. They tried to kill Andrew Jackson. It didn't work. Central banks were instituted on two occasions in that century. And with the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, who of course was killed, and then Johnson, who followed him, who was also killed. Because why? Their opposition to the central banks, right? Central banks failed to get a hold in the 19th century. They had two shots at it, and it just wasn't taking. There was too much opposition, and rightfully so. But with the turn of the century, they finally got their man in this idiot Woodrow Wilson. Idiot, right? The Princeton professor, right? All the brilliance, all the intellect, the town idiot screwed up this country. And with that, what happened? The IRS happened. Now we have an Internal Revenue Service. We have income tax come into play. That didn't happen. It wasn't always this way, ladies and gentlemen. Once upon a time, you didn't pay income tax. You made your money. There was tax, but it was not income tax. That came with Woodrow Wilson. That came with the Federal Reserve. That came with all the scumbaggery in the early 20th century. Now, let's fast forward this a little bit, right, to now. A little bit of background right there shows you how Great Britain lost the Revolutionary War, how Great Britain lost the War of 1812, how with the support of the globalist banking cabal, still failed, right? The money invested in winning those wars. And they invested also in the Civil War in the South with the slavery that they created, that they established, that was their business. That the United States of America had to look at itself and say, hey, we inherited this mess, but this shit is wrong. It's stupid. It is not in keeping with the designs of liberty and freedom from tyranny. The idea, the grand idea that all men are created equal. It's a thorn in the side to have these grand ideas written out and fancy lettering, fancy typography, but have to look into the southern states and still see, hey, those are human beings. They're being treated like property. These are human beings, and they're not afforded the freedoms, you know? A difficult situation.
But when you really lay it out, it's wrong. It's wrong for this country. It's wrong for, in our faith. It was a wicked practice carried out by globalist entities who just want to pillage, to steal at all cost, trampling all people, that they may get their riches, that they may get their wealth. And that was never a part of who we were collectively in the national conscience. So we threw that aside. A difficult war, brother against brother, and began to really make the determination for ourselves who we are, who we intend to be. And even though our Constitution and all the provisions, the entire design of our nation accounted for criminality in the federal government, there really never was a way to prevent it. So when the sellouts manage to take office and they do not represent the interests of the nation, they do not represent the interests of their constituencies, when they turn their backs on their nation and answer only to their globalist handlers, the nation that we think we are begins to deteriorate. And ladies and gentlemen, in the year 2024, we are 115 years into this deterioration. These globalist scumbags lost the Revolutionary War. These globalist scumbags lost the War of 1812. These globalist scumbags lost the Civil War. Yes, they lost the Civil War because they supported the South. They lost all the wars that they were investing all these dollars into, thinking that it was a slam dunk. But we always got help. We always got help along the way from the most unlikely place in the world, as far away as far it can be, the Russians. So isn't it interesting now that we are in a battle for the soul and future of this country? The nationalist interests are, believe it or not, the United States of America. We the people teamed up with Vladimir Putin's Orthodox Christian Russia against the globalist infection into our nation, which we call Democrats and rhinos, right? That is the disease on this country that is manipulated by the globalist cabal. And the MAGA is the nationalist effort to maintain identity and to empower the nationalist movement globally, the multipolar world scenario. The evil cabal, they avenged their humiliations in the 19th century and the 18th century by overcoming Russia with their Bolshevik communism and atheism, right? All that globalist money out of England went to support those Bolshevik revolutionaries in the cities in Russia until they overcame the government. An endless supply of funding came in to make that thing happen. And when they got the power, the rest of the world, the rest of the society were just peasants. You lost the nobility class of Russia. They were slaughtered. And you had these communists, Bolshevik communists, and peasants. Peasants who didn't play lawfare. Peasants who didn't understand all this bullshit. They farmed. They provided. They became soldiers. But they were overtaken. And their lives were built in their villages around
the big Orthodox churches and the little Orthodox churches. All the records were kept there. And these communist, Bolshevik, scumbag, globalist, enabled predators ravaged through Russia and Ukraine and so much of the lands of Eastern Orthodoxy and killed millions upon millions of Christians. And like I explained before, the evil cabal avenged their humiliation also on the Western Front through manipulation of these sellout politicians who helped bring the Federal Reserve into being and have transferred the wealth out of here into their pockets, into their interests. So here we stand again. The colonial cabal versus the American patriots with the help of the Orthodox Russians. This is the game we are playing. I don't give a solid or liquid shit what your TV is telling you, how they're drawing the lines up, the battle lines up. I don't care. This is the American truth. This is the recurring history. This is the ongoing battle that we have been in from the inception of this country. And it don't matter that your ancestors were or were not here and part of it. You're here now. You've been here. You're American. You're an immigrant. You're a legal, processed immigrant, or you are the child of such. You are American. When you are here and you are a citizen, you are no longer Italian. You are no longer Kenyan. You are no longer Australian. You are no longer Chinese. You're a Chinese American. You're an Italian American. You're a version of American, but you are American. Now you need to know what American is. And that is a land of liberty. And that is a land of freedom from tyranny. Not freedom to do whatever the fuck you want. There's an F-bomb because you get one every episode. It's freedom from tyranny. And tyranny is the globalists. That is literally a word for the globalists. They are the greedy power brokers, mongers, addicts of the world that want everything and they want everybody enslaved under their rule. You're an American. You're from India. You're from Egypt. You're from El Salvador. You're from Paraguay. You're from Indonesia. But you're here. You're American. Here is your moment to stand up. Once upon a time, there was a revolutionary war against these globalists, against this elite cabal that hates everybody. And all the men who stood opposed, the original patriots of this nation, were exclusively European and almost wholly of British stock. And from the historical perspective, that is why so many people, well, quote unquote, people of color, think that this is a white nation. It just began that way. What's happening here is chapter 2. And this is the part where the revolution happens and now everybody, the whole multicultural nation that we are, takes part in history. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at the precipice. Take up your American nature. Put your adjectives aside. Forget about being Korean. Forget about being Nigerian. Forget about being Serbian. Now is the time to be American. History is knocking at your door. What's it gonna be, boy? You gonna be a patriot or you gonna be a loyalist? The more things change, the more things stay the same.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.